Target today. We are hoping to have Bill DeWitt the Third on in a few minutes, possibly a Nuck as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to let Wheeler handle most of it. I'll ask a couple of Dave questions, but, you know, don't want to annoy them on his first day in a new job.
Yeah, with a new title, yeah.
What kind of socks do you like?
That'd be great.
What's your favorite cookie? Do you like Palomar?
That gave me a question, though. nothing wrong with that.
What is your view on the Malamar industry?
Right. So you're rich. You've had Malamars. You ever had a pinwheel? You ever slum it?
Let me introduce you to my friend, the pinwheel.
People are all about me wearing the collared shirt.
Yeah.
I had a golf lesson today with my new best friend, Ed Curtis. And, you know, he's taken me under his wing, and we went out to Forest Park and played for, you know, hit balls for about an hour. And, yeah.
Look at
Turns
that.
Out I didn't even need a collared shirt.
No, not to the driving range, not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'd never been there. There's, like, the Forest Park course.
I'm guessing at the Highlands. Forest Park course, you can also probably just play with a T-shirt.
Yeah.
A lot of public courses.
I certainly did.
Yeah. A lot of public courses, it's going to be that way.
Yeah. Jacob says, ask him if he can get rid of the City Connect jerseys or make them less ugly. Jacob, that's my favorite jersey.
He just started a battle with the DGS.
I love that look.
You do, yeah?
I know it was like cool to hate them, but man, there's some bad ones out there. I thought ours was pretty good.
I didn't really think there was anything hateable about it.
I like the solid red with the white pants.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have to be that jersey in particular, and I like the baby blues.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all pretty damn good.
Yeah, they're not bad.
It's partly, I think, because it's an old franchise. You know, I think a lot of the old franchises have what I would think of as the best uniforms. Cardinals, Dodgers, Yankees. But I think maybe it's just that. It's because it's so classic and it's so tried and true that it's hard to not like it.
Yeah.
But, you know, modern game, you gotta have different looks. You got to have different things because younger fans get excited about stuff like that. Got to have it for everybody, not just old stodgy people.
Sorry, I'm texting with Matt Pauly about important radio decisions.
Sure, yeah.
Right now. So.
Right.
Got to be able to do it all. Got to handle it all at once.
Two things at once, baby.
That's right. Maybe three. Who knows? So, yeah, we'll hopefully talk to Bill DeWitt III, maybe a Nuck. And how far are you going to go back with those guys?
With Bill III, since I got here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's been around. He's been a part of the organization since I got here in 06. I don't know Anouk as well. I've met him, but I haven't had much direct
confrontation,
no direct contact.
Yeah, I haven't
really
confronted him yet.
My contact tends to be more on the baseball side. It just does.
Yeah.
You know, the people that I talk to, the people that I interact with the most, but no, that's not, I mean, like, but with ownership and with Bill III, I mean, you've done a million things with those guys.
I tend to see Bill III around a lot.
Yeah. No, he absolutely, you know, one of the main presences at the ballpark,
mm-hmm.
and in spring training and everything else. I mean, it was interesting to me, you know, this was not a super shocking development, like the way that they're doing this. But I think the interesting thing is Bill III kind of just describing a little bit more of getting in more involved and more having more time with the baseball side of the business as opposed to the business side of the business. Right. Because every sports franchise, I know they're all overseen by a chairman, by an owner, which in this case is Bill Jr. And this is probably more prep for Bill III to be in that role down the road. I don't know that they're going to put it that way, but it sure feels that way because he's been in the business side for, you know, 20 plus years, 25 years, and doing more on the baseball side, as he kind of joked about. I must be an attentive listener, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's going to be spending more time with that, and with Anouk in charge of the business, that frees up the time for the third to do that.
Yeah.
So
what would you expect, being a baseball guy, if you were counseling Bill DeWitt III, who wants to become more involved in the baseball side? What advice would you give him? Like, oh, you want to know more about the baseball side? I would pay attention to this.
Just hang out with Haim. I mean, maybe move into the office next to him. No, he's got that too, right? I mean, it's not like he's been uninvolved. He and Bill Jr. and before Haim, it was Mo. They all are together all the time. They talk all the time. The plans that you see unfold in front of you, whether it's, you know, the trade market, the draft, the direction of the team in a given year. It was always all of them together making the plan, and whatever you see is the result of what all of them decide. It's never one of them. It's never only junior or the third. It's always typically those two guys with the baseball leadership.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, the business side of it has been under Bill the Third's watch for all these years.
In a nuck, how well do you know him?
Not as well as I know the other guys. I mean, he's only been around a couple of years.
You haven't confronted him yet.
Yeah, I haven't had any confrontation with him yet. Maybe we can change that tomorrow. But no, he's so on the business side, you tend to have influence over everything, right? Marketing, ticket sales, the broadcast teams, things along those lines. And I mean, he seems like a great dude. I mean, he's very sharp. He came in a couple years ago, and he's been a big part of how they've tried to change some of the experience at the ballpark to do things like the family section, to adapt on the fly, to have the tarps off section, to have the Friday Night Live that they're talking about, to try to change the vibe so that people can get what they want out of coming to a ball game. Because every one of us that goes to a game wants something a little bit different.
It's very
right?
true.
Like, I want just nothing but nuts and bolts. I'm there for the game. I don't really care where I sit. I don't care about drink specials. I don't care about concerts. I don't care about fireworks. I'm just there for that.
Yeah, you're fun.
And there are a lot of people like that, but then there are others that are just looking to be entertained. And they're trying to do that so that everyone can get the experience that they want out of going to the ballpark.
I'm going!
Mr. DeWitt III and a Nuck on the show here in the next few minutes, but it's a moving target. You know, they just did a big press conference, and they will be doing it from the KMOX studio at the ballpark with Matt Pauly. So we're just kind of waiting to hear when they're going to be on. So we'll keep it baseball. You know, it's always awkward. You try to get a new topic started, then you have to stop it. So let's talk about the game last night.
Yeah, I mean, last night was not the greatest. They got a nice little comeback there at the very end and almost got the job done. What we saw a little bit of last night was certainly a tough offensive day, which is not that shocking. You know, so far in the month of June, the offense has been phenomenal, so you're not going to be phenomenal every night. But then you saw late kind of the penalty that teams pay when starting pitchers for several days don't go deep into games. Because what happened late in the game yesterday, you have a nothing-nothing game going into the last inning, and all of your main relievers are down, right? Jojo Romero's down. Riley O'Brien's down. You know, Ryan Stanek probably down. You know, a lot of the guys, George Soriano, down. There are a lot of guys you count on in those close games where the outcome is in question were not available because they were heavily used over the weekend with the short starts in Kansas City. So this is what we, you know, what Matt and Bernie and Tom and Ron and all of us are talking about a lot when we're talking about the rotation. And you saw it even last night with Leahy being really good.
Yeah.
You know, he got into the seventh inning. He was really good. Even with that, you don't have coverage because of the previous handful of days, which is why we talk so much about that, which is why we've been talking about Matthew Liberatore, because he's had a lot of short starts. And these things do end up with a tax at the end of the day. It may not be the day it happens. It might not be the next day, but eventually you kind of end up with a short bullpen and you have to go with who you have. And the guys you don't have for that day, you can't just throw everybody out there 3, 4, 5 days in a row because then you burn them out and they're down for weeks or months. So it's a tough little thing to battle. And that's why we focus so much on the starting pitchers and the, you know, getting quality out of them and getting at least somewhat deep into games on a regular basis.
This is probably a really stupid question, but a lot of people have to wonder this, knowing that, you know, Nolan Ryan threw 200 pitches and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Humans used to be able to do that. It always seems to me that the relievers are babied too much. Like, why can't they throw 2 or 3 innings every this many days?
Most of it's about training, right? So if you think about how you're trained in any sport, if you don't train, like, just say, for example, you're just a regular CrossFitter. You're in amazing shape. You're super strong. You're flexible. But you don't train for the bench press. You're not going to be able to throw 300 pounds on the bench and move it because you're not training for that. And that's kind of what happens in all sports, but especially we're talking baseball here. They're not trained to do that. They're not trained to rein it in and throw at 80 to 90% effort most of the time. they're dialed in relievers now. It's all gas, no brakes every time you're out there. And the more you do that, the more it limits the how often you can work without getting hurt. And what's changed from the days that, you know, we have our buddy Scott Terry on all the time and talks about, you know, having a 4 or 5 man bullpen. And those guys would do that. They would throw 2 or 3 innings, maybe get a day off, and then do it again, and then do it again. Or they would pitch every day, 1 inning at a time. Well, they were trained to do it, but they were also trained to pitch in a different way than guys are now. So you, as a sprinter, think about doing a sprint full speed. And so let's say the task today is you've got to complete 10 100-meter runs, each of them under a certain time. Let's say you're a sub-11, you're a sub-10. Let's say they got to be under 10 seconds. If you space those out and you have an hour to run those 10, your performance is going to be better than if you put them close together and you got to do them all in 10 minutes. See what I'm saying?
I do.
So that amount of exertion, that amount of effort leads to fatigue. And if you don't get proper rest, then that will lead to injuries eventually. And that's where the changes have come in. We understand more that there are injuries, and the sport has chosen a riskier path when it comes to max effort pitching because it's also more effective.
See, I think I'm making the mistake of I can throw 18 pitches then I could come back tomorrow and throw 18 more pitches. You know, just like,
well, let me tell you this, go on a mound. And I'm not telling you, I'm talking about, you know, anybody out there. You get out on a mound, make 30 warm up throws so that you're fully warmed up and you're ready to go. And then throw 20 pitches with as maximum effort, as hard as you can throw them. And then tell me how you feel the next day. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not training for it. You're going to feel worse than they do. But it's the same principle. And they're also doing this while throwing bullpen sessions, playing long toss every single day to make sure that their arm stays in shape. They're running a ton. They're in the gym working out. And it's also partly like we understand the science of this more. Where in previous generations, we just didn't know. It's like, all right, well, he says he's good, let him go. Well, now we say, I don't care if he says he's good. We know that the body needs recovery. Just like we know so much more about how important sleep is than we did in previous generations, right? I mean, you know, you hear all the old legends, well, they were out all night. Guys don't do that now because they know that sleep is a big deal for recovery and injury prevention. And the more knowledge we have of those things, the more it impacts the way players are used.
Are we losing even the concept of the middle reliever?
Oh, no, they're all like the emphasis on relievers has never been greater.
Because that seems so important. Like what Dobbins did for us.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A week or so.
Having the long reliever is definitely a little bit more of a luxury. And it sounds like Matt Pauley is ready for us to bring him into the mix from the ballpark. Because he's there with Bill. It sounds like he's there with Bill DeWitt the third. Matt, are you with us?
You, Bill DeWitt III, the brand new CEO of the Cardinals here as well. Anouk Kurunturanti should be joining us here in just a moment. But as mentioned, Bill is here. And Bill, first and foremost, congratulations on what is a very cool day for this organization and also for your family.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a fun day, exciting, and really looking forward to the team we have and what it means for the future.
Bill, this is Dave Glover. We've yet to meet in person, although I have seen you awkwardly in public many times and been weird about not saying hello. So if you're like, there's some bald guy tracking me, that's me.
Okay.
I'm going to let Matt and Kevin Wheeler do most of this interview since they know what they're talking about. But on behalf of myself and the audience, congratulations. And here's to another 30, 40 years with you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been hard to believe it's been 30 and this is our 31st, but hopefully many more to come.
Fantastic. Kev, take it over.
Bill, first of all, congrats. I know you're hearing that a lot today, but it won't get old, so congratulations. It's a very cool thing. I thought it was really interesting listening to you describe what's changing for you in this, because obviously as these titles shift, duties shift. So explain again a little bit how you see this working for you in the short term, and obviously that desire to even get more involved on the baseball side as you've been with the business side for all these years.
Yeah, so I think it's been kind of an evolution over the last, 18 years in my role as team president, but maybe more so in the last 3 or 4 where, you know, a lot of the strategic decisions on the baseball side, I had a seat at the table. And on the business side, you know, I had worked my way up through that. So I kind of knew who everybody was and what their opinions were coming into things like decisions making on the business side. On the baseball side, I was getting things sort of after they had already been baked, so to speak, whether it was a trade deadline thing or something in the off season or how the draft might play out. But I'd look forward to doing a little bit more of a deep dive into the baseball organization so that when those decisions come, while they'll still, of course, be collaborative, there'll just be more context there and you'll understand where people are coming from and what their roles are so that, you know, you just have a full picture when you're thinking through those things.
Bill, I think it's interesting how you guys have always, whether it's been privately, you know, in regular conversations off the air or on the air in front of microphones, talked about the way that, that you do things as a group. And I don't just mean you and the family. I'm talking about you, your dad, Mo, before he left, Haim now. Maybe describe a little bit deeper, if you can, for our listeners and for Cardinals fans, the group nature of all of these big decisions, because obviously it's not one person simply saying, let's do this. I know that one person, the chairman, Bill DeWitt Jr., has the hammer if he wants it, but I know that you guys always talk everything through.
That's right. And I think that's been a key part of how we've made decisions. And, you know, I mentioned that I think in other organizations, the chairman, control partner, if you will, sometimes overrules, you know, decision-making recommendations a lot, you know. My father hasn't done that much. He has on occasion, and as I think it's important to do, you know, otherwise maybe you aren't expressing your full opinion in that role. But it's always been very collaborative. And when a big decision happens, you know, it isn't just, you know, me and my dad necessarily, or me and my dad and Mo or Haim. There might be 5 or 6 or 7 people in the room because you're, you know, ultimately Haim has to rely on a big staff of people to serve up decisions too. And if there's something that needs more research or somebody's opinion isn't fully fleshed out, I think that's how I view my role, is to make sure that those things are all fleshed out, all the information is on the table, and then we can hopefully come to a consensus on something, and you're not overruling anything. You're just, you know, putting that stamp on something that we're all sort of agreeing on.
Bill, is this a good time to kind of be jumping in more on the baseball operation, just in the sense that with what Haim has brought in, there's been a lot of changes and a lot of new stuff, and the whole organization is kind of learning it together at the same time, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there are a lot of new faces. And Haim, I think, was great that he was had been with two other organizations, because while we were, I think, pretty up there, considered industry standard on a lot of things, you know, eventually people start doing things a little differently in other places that work. And so having his perspective like that, it was healthy for us and will continue to be. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the timing of where we are right now, more people in the room than ever. And I think it's just that much more important that we sort of know where people are coming from, what their source of truth is related to information, and that we work through decisions together so that everybody can feel like they've had their say. Not, you're always going to have disagreement. You want that. You want people disagreeing about certain things. It means that people have strongly held opinions and have done their homework and feel a certain way. But at the end of the day, you want to hear it all from everybody first.
Bill, you and Kevin and I are around the same age. We've been watching, playing baseball for our whole life. You're in a pretty unique situation, though, the view that you have had the last few decades working with your family. Can you just kind of take that wherever you want, whether it's as a front office guy or even as a fan, how the past 20, 30 years have evolved and what you've seen the changes in baseball?
Yeah, I would say looking back, I don't look back wistfully very often, but this is kind of a moment where that's appropriate. And the one thing that it strikes me is just how much the game has changed and the industry has changed in those 30 years. The fundamental game is the same, but, you know, gosh, I mean, when we first got here, I think our revenues were like 70 million, something like that, 70 or 80 million.
That's a one-year contract for Shohei Ohtani. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's Ohtani, you know. So obviously the growth, the organization has grown to support more revenues and stuff, but so has the industry itself evolved. You know, teams have gotten more sophisticated. I feel like we were pretty much on the leading edge of that for quite a period of time. Other teams have gotten very professional, very sophisticated. The industry has experienced that growth that we talked about. The economics have changed as a result of it. Some of the disparities have grown. We'll be trying to deal with that in this next CBA. The game itself, I feel like, has gone from pretty close to what I remembered as a kid in, and then sort of getting involved 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like it was that much different to, you know, the analytics revolution changing the nature of the game very noticeably. And I'm really proud of the industry, which is not usually open to that much change, for having worked its way through these changes on the field, all of which I've supported and feel great about, some more than others, of course. But the pitch clock in particular, the ABS this year, I just feel like they are taking us into the next generation of fans and making sure that the product on the field is really good. And I feel good about that part of the change as well.
It's interesting, Bill. You mentioned that analytical change. That, you know, a lot of this relates to the prevalence in these last 30 years, the growth of technology and the technological impact on all sports. But since we're talking baseball here, specifically baseball, and that has meant a lot more challenges for all teams trying to figure out, all right, we got to find different ways to appeal to fans. And boy, are we seeing that now. We were talking about the ballpark experience and how you guys have been working to shift some things around to make it so that everybody has the experience that they want. The nerd like me gets the nerdy baseball stuff, and the kids get a little bit of fun. And now the tarps off section too. How important is that to continue to seek those ways to appeal to each fan on their terms?
That's very important. And that's one of the things Anouk preached day one when he got here. He's like, we need to really think about the different demographics that we're serving and then have an offering for them that's more specific and tailored to what they want. And so you do that market research, you understand the different groups that are coming to Cardinals baseball, and you have to do some simplifying assumptions a little bit because, you know, 3 million fans, there's 3 million opinions, but there are some patterns that do play out pretty consistently. You know, the Friday Night Live thing has been really cool for young professionals and people that are looking to have a good time. And Family Sundays is an example of a different demo where we're really catering to what they might want to do on Sunday, bringing value to the table. You know, our Coca-Cola section promotion where everybody, you know, for $30 they get all you can eat. It's pretty funny. That went viral. And we're seeing how people choose to try to beat the house when things are free like that. It's pretty funny. But and then when you have something organic happen, like the tarps off section, really thinking hard about, okay, how do we have this become really fun, maybe get bigger, and just put a little bit of our thinking into it and not mess with it too much. I think that was a nice insight that we had there. Let it be organic and don't try to own it. Let it be a fan thing. And I think that's been a comment you've heard from Anouk and others. The fans need to be at the center of everything. And we don't need to be the end-all, be-all solution to anything. We just need to listen to them and kind of go with where they're going.
How much are you looking forward to? And I know your dad is still very involved, final decision, things like that. But it's 2:15 in the afternoon on July 31st. It's trade deadline day, and Haim comes to you and says, we got a great opportunity. And, by the way, it's going to push payroll a little bit more. How are you looking forward to those type of conversations and being even more involved in those type of baseball decisions?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that makes this business so exciting is that there are moments in time where you know, like, the stakes are high. And obviously there's a lot of money flying around, and you have to look at things through that lens to a certain degree. But when you mix it with all the baseball stuff and what we're trying to achieve, I think if your goals are clear, those decisions get a little easier because you're like, okay, is this consistent with our long-term plan? And if the answer is yes, you know, the answer is probably going to be yes. Mm-hmm. If it's not, you're going to really labor over the decision if you're going to say yes, if that makes sense.
Bill, I thought one of the most interesting things that came up from you guys during the press conference was when someone asked about the trade deadline. And, of course, you know, we here at KMOX and Sports Department, we're going to be talking about it months ahead of time. And you guys said, you know, it's only about a week until we really start getting active. And I'm curious, what other things do we not understand? Like, you guys you guys live and die.
This could be a long answer, man.
No, I like asking these big ones. Like, you guys, anytime the team has a slump, it's like, oh, the DeWitts are this and they're not that, and why don't they understand this and that? Give us a little look behind the curtain, what it's like to be a DeWitt going through the season.
Boy, that's a good one. I kind of know what you mean in the sense that, and I appreciate the tone of the question, which is like, we don't often see everything going on behind the scenes. And so strongly held beliefs sometimes aren't based on knowledge of what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see that from fans, I'm like, we love that passion, but you just probably don't understand this or that behind the scenes.
Yeah.
The trade deadline's one of them. Actually, when I said that, I kind of thought to myself, Himes Group's probably teeing up ideas for the trade deadline right now. But, you know, from an ownership standpoint, you're probably not going to dig deep into what options might be out there until about a week or so, you know. So it was more of a comment from an ownership perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, there's certain things that – I'll give you another example of when that occurs. Is like when you read about a possible trade – that somebody has dreamed up.
Yeah,
right.
And they're like, this is what the Cardinals should do, and this is what X team should do, and they should do this trade. And here's why. And you're like, wow, that's a good analysis, except for the fact that you're not considering, you know, this other player makes $100 million, and, like, we don't have the room for that or something. I'm making that up. But often there's things just missing. So it's very cool to see, and sometimes they're cool ideas. But I do sometimes think that classic baseball trades are the most fun. Mm-hmm. When money is not an object. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it's two young players,
right,
or something, and you need a pitcher and they need a hitter, and you swap for those reasons. Those are fun because it almost feels like fans have a good feel for those because they don't necessarily need all that other background info. But that's an example of where fan input actually can play a role.
I love it. Yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for.
I'm sorry for sending all those ideas, Bill. I apologize.
That is Bill DeWitt, the third new chief executive officer for the Cardinals. Bill, thank you so much. We're going to transition to Anouk. I know you've got a lot going on, so we'll let you get out of here. But thank you so much for taking some time with us today. And again, congratulations.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
So with that, we'll welcome on to the show right now. He is Anouk Kurunaratne. He is now the president of business operations for the Cardinals. It wasn't that long ago that he was brought in, replacing Dan Farrell in a vice president role. And he's somebody who went to Wash U, was working with the Toronto Blue Jays. And Anouk, it's great to see you. And I love the story of you having a connection to St. Louis, being a Wash U guy. And now here, just a few years later, after joining the organization, you've got a really big role with a president title. Congratulations, first off, and I'm sure you feel great about this.
Yeah, thank you. Certainly couldn't have predicted that it would play out this way. That's kind of the fun thing about how this works out. But incredible organization. I think we're at a juncture where there's an opportunity to really shape what the next two decades of Cardinal baseball can be. And, you know, Haim has articulated it, and, you know, we're all on the same page on really being aligned on that ambition. And so it's exciting. You know, and certainly there's always a personal component of that when there's changes like this. But for me, even more than, you know, a personal accolade, I'm just excited to be, you know, involved in helping steward this amazing franchise.
Anouk, this is Dave Glover. We've yet to meet, but I'm going to turn you over to Kevin Wheeler here pretty quick. But I just wanted to say congratulations. I look forward to meeting you. as a fellow WashU grad, we should probably be best friends.
So, you're getting hit up by the collections office too, I'm sure.
That's right.
All right.
I keep referring them to you.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Good, Kevin.
No, congratulations. Maybe it doesn't seem this way to you, and you can answer the question. Boy, it seems like it has to have been a whirlwind for you. You come to a new place. I know you had familiarity with the WashU connection, but a new team with a role that was really significant. And over these last 2 years, there's been a lot of change.
There has, yeah. I mean, it is, like I said, one of the compelling things about this opportunity was that, one, there's not a lot of franchises that are as iconic and significant as the Cardinals. And to join at a time when there's so many things that need to kind of get figured out and transition required from, you know, the ownership transition that was, announced today to, Haim coming in, Mo was planning on retiring. We need to renovate the stadium. There's a whole bunch of industry issues that are ongoing, from media to, labor to everything else. Like, it is a very, and then, the team performance mm-hmm. element of the Cardinals, like so many different things changing at the same time that was a challenge that was really exciting to me. I've always been someone that would rather be working on a challenging situation than, a simple and easy one. So it's really made sense for me.
I know there's still a lot that you guys want to accomplish, but is it rewarding knowing that we've seen attendance tick up a little bit? We've seen the TV situation get figured out. We've seen the gambling situation get figured out. There's still stuff to happen, but some of those big things, maybe not fully checked off, but you can see the check mark, kind of starting.
Yeah, I think we're making great progress. I wouldn't say it's rewarding. It kind of, in some places, reinforced what we thought we needed to do. And in other places, we've learned about changes we need to make to the new initiatives we've done. But this is very much a long-term approach, and it's rooted in really understanding and doing what we think our fans want, to see and hear and feel from the Cardinals. And that's going to be a process that evolves, and that mindset is applied to media. It's applied to the ballpark experience. It's really applied to every aspect of our business, and it's an iterative process. So, yeah, I mean, it's always great to celebrate those wins, but we still have a lot of work to do.
Anouk, are there things about the way the business ops work, or elements of it, and you don't have to get into the details, but are there things that maybe we wouldn't think of off the top of our head that would fall under that umbrella, or that would impact these game day experiences and things along those lines?
I'm sure there are. It is when you get under the hood, it's I was telling someone yesterday, once you work in the business side of sports and you see all of the different parts of the business organization, it's very hard to go to a game and see it the same way, because you're thinking about the people in the control room running the scoreboard. There's like 30 people that sit in the scoreboard room to make the scoreboard work and to, put all the stats and the content on there. and that's just one example of, if you're just sitting there as a fan experiencing it, you're not thinking about who's choosing the song that is playing right now. How do they time the breaks on the scoreboard? You're thinking about the logistics and the operation of people in the ballpark and how they're flowing and how long the lines are and how friendly the ushers are or not. And that's just like game day operations.
Right.
And then there's everything from marketing, content creation, digital advertising, ways that we engage with our fans through social media or other owned and operated channels like that. There's ticket sales, there's sponsorship, there's broadcast media, there's the food and beverage business, there's a retail business, and then there's the whole back office operation of legal, finance, HR, IT, analytics. So there's a lot of different components to it. That's one of the things that makes it really fun and adds a lot of variety, to my day-to-day, because there's so many different things that are going on. And one of the things we're trying to do is really coordinate those things, because in the end, we've talked a lot about this, fans have one experience when they come to the ballpark, even though there's like 50 different touch points that are managed by different groups in our organization. And we really need to be coordinated, and we need to be in sync to deliver a cohesive experience to people.
Can you speak to the importance of being nimble? Like, let's talk about tarps off for a second, because that happens organically. And within a day, Ollie's buying out a couple sections. And then within 3 days, you guys are blowing out three sections where people have season tickets. So you got to reseat people. You got to make the decision that we're going to basically take these seats off the market and create this general admission area for people who want to come in and take their shirts off and go crazy. For all that to happen in a really short amount of times in reaction to something that happened organically, how important is just being nimble to your job and to just any successful organization?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, that's something we've prioritized. and being nimble, meaning, you know, we're able to move quickly without compromising our standards of what experience we want to deliver or how we work together internally. You know, and to me, being nimble is we can stay coordinated and move quickly. And this was a really good example of that. It's something we've been working on. But it was everyone from stadium operations to the ticket sales group to the marketing and content groups and social media. Like all of those different groups had to talk about what makes sense, figure out how to relocate tickets, move ushers to different sections, and you know, communicate a different standard of fan conduct than we, you know, typically see and expect at Busch Stadium. And being nimble is definitely important, because if you're not, you miss those opportunities.
Anouk, thank you so much for your time. Once again, congratulations. Look forward to meeting you in person soon, and all the best for, again, the continued success over the decades.
Thank you, guys, and look forward to seeing you in Seattle or in St. Louis whenever you guys are here.